So we're trying to move people from here to there, God's agenda, bury some mission to the world. I need to be called to do it. Again, if the calling is not clear, none of the rest of what I say is going to matter. Because if you don't feel called to do it, you're not going to do it. You'll be a hired hand. Okay, so first C is call. The second C is connection. And this is something new to Lisa and myself, and that I've definitely not gotten. I don't have this down by a long shot. So I'm sharing some thoughts with you and my own learnings. But connection is to live and lead, living and leading out of a loving union with Jesus. Okay? Living and leading towards that end, the agenda, living and leading out of a loving union with Jesus. The world that we live in can be pretty stormy. I don't know about you, but there are financial challenges and setbacks. There are bills to be paid. Cars break down. Increases come. There are homes to be maintained. Retirement plans. Kids. Man, they affect your budget. And completely unpredictably, suddenly the school says, no, tracksuits, new tracksuit, you know, and then eventually my kids are the only one in the school with the old tracksuit. Then we're just like, okay, maybe they should also get a new tracksuit. Okay, but it's like a grand tracksuit. There are so many financial challenges. Kids to raise. For me personally, family life for me is the hardest thing. Not church leadership. Family life for me is certainly the hardest thing. If I look at, I've got three goals, and the goal is for them, for all three of them to feel loved and accepted, for all three of them to know God, for me to prepare them for life and keep them safe, that is an assignment of note. Okay? So often in our home, I would connect with the one girl and go out with her and spend time with her. And oh, okay, man, that was good. That was good. And I get home, like, when I want to breathe. And then there's the other two sitting there, and me? Okay, no matter how you schedule this deal, it lands there. Or I had Pippa sit with me yesterday. And I've not said this till he said, but one of the daughters had a bit of a disagreement with her. And so I spoke to her with, she's thinking of trying to resolve the disagreement versus how to resolve the disagreement. So I said, how would you do it? And she did it in a particular way that was very aggressive. This is another daughter. Very aggressive, and now she's planning to, I'm upset, you know, kind of thing. And I said, okay, what if you maybe rather take this way, say, hey, can we maybe sit down and talk a little bit and just say, yes, something that I was thinking and feeling, whatever. And she's like, amen, amen. Then suddenly Pippa says, listen, can we sit and talk a little bit? And that wasn't her. Okay, so she just overheard the conversation. So she she said to me, can you and I, as a man, can we just sit and talk a little bit? And I think she started off fooling around with it, and then she said, I just feel like you're starting to work too much. And then the tears started running. She wants me to be a stay-at-home dad. That is the reality. No, that bucket cannot ever be full. No matter if I spend 5 hours with her and I say, oh, I need to go to an appointment, he's like, you always work. juggling those balls, hectic. Marriage, hard to stay in love through the storms of life and raising children and paying the bills and not just be roommates and do life together and work with each other through each other's issues and your own issues. It's a lot going on. Then we bring work into the mix. You know, the more I love my job and I get to work with my fellow people that are also an employee of the same organization that I am are all Christians. So although we barely have disagreements, but when we do have disagreements, we can obviously sit down and talk through it and you hurt my feelings and this and that. It can be a lot harder in the corporate world where feelings are jumped upon and expectations are crazy. I mean, again, it just adds to the storm. Health challenges. You get them at different ages. I'm going through an interesting time of health, of not really recovering, realizing that I'm not going to recover. Let's call it that. from back problems where I am basically, it's not a high pain scale, it's probably just 5 out of 10, but it's 24 hours. Okay, so 24 hours, 5 out of 10, and then fluctuates during the day to maybe 8. It rarely gets, 10 is usually when I go into a spasm or pop a disc or something like that. But that is an adjustment, okay, in terms of how to navigate family and life and the ministry and what you can and cannot do. Again, it adds to the storm. Now we've not even spoken about our spiritual life. Again, and in other words, hey, how are you doing spiritually, man? What's the words? How are you? How are you? Okay, are you growing, man? Are you loving each other? You know, all the then you add in there. Then we get to the family group. How's your family group, man? Are you guys growing? Are you guys loving each other? Are you seeking and saving loss? You get what I'm saying here? Okay. There is a lot that is happening. What is loving union? Loving union is the place of the eye of the storm. Okay? Where you slow down, you become quiet, and you become quiet in order to receive both God's will and presence into your life in the midst of all the chaos. Loving union is that spot over there where you get to remain in Jesus and where Jesus gets to remain in you. Okay? This is the spot where you receive and absorb, as we spoke of earlier on, His love, His kindness, right there in the middle of the storm, His favor, His compassion, His goodness. It's the place where you receive His righteousness, His holiness. It's a place where you behold, become quiet enough. And now, be clear here, it's in the middle of the storm. You can't go with the storm. Loving union doesn't happen in the car on the way to work, or on the run, or quickly while I make myself a cup of coffee. Okay, I'm going to behold the splendor and the beauty and the majesty, and I'm not going to become quiet enough. And I'm not saying you can't pray at those times, but that's not going to be a big loving union moment. Okay, loving union is where I become quiet enough to be able to receive His presence and to be able to receive His will. It's a place where you find joy. It is a place where you find peace. It is a place where you can say, "The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not be in want." It is a place that while you, in the midst of the storm, you can say, "He leads me beside quiet waters." Okay? That all happens right there in the eye of the storm. It is a place where your faith gets intensified, where your resolve gets renewed, where your love gets rekindled, and it's a place where you get energized to climb the hill once again. This is the place where you get transformed into the image of Christ with an ever-increasing glory, which is from the Lord. But it's also the place where you receive, because remember what I said, we receive His presence, that's the peace, the joy, the love, the kindness, the glory, the splendor, the beauty, but also His will. God, how do you want me to be your hands and your feet and your eyes and your ears in this day? Father, is this still my call or isn't it? Father, we have looked at some enormously big things here. Okay? Some big agenda items. What do you want our next step to be as a group? Please make your will clear for me and for us as to what next steps should look like. Because there could be good and right next steps that is not God's will for you at this time. Those are your good steps, those are your good thoughts, and they might be good thoughts. But that's not what we're seeking. Yes, we're seeking good thoughts, but we are above all seeking the will of God. And that all happens here with loving union. if we want to lead people from here to there, we're going to have to do it out of loving union. We're going to have to find the peace and the kindness and the joy and the majesty and the splendor of God here in loving union in the midst of all of that, because the storm is not going to disappear. Remove some of those elements, as the finances gets resolved, something else happens. As the kid move out of the house, you suddenly face your spouse and you're like, who are you again? Okay, the storm just continues. So in the midst of all of this, there needs to be a loving union where I can stop, where I become quiet, I receive His will, I receive His presence, and I move forward in order to conquer the hill. Okay, and so this is, as I said, this is where all these things take place. The question is, how will you do if there's no loving union? It's chaos. And I think some of us are currently feeling that. Now, it's maybe the beginning of the year. I should ask you again in 6 months. So there's obviously a natural reboot that takes place in the soul in the beginning of every year. Okay? But if there's no loving union, what's going to happen? You're going to get caught up into the chaos. And there is no way on God's blue earth that you're going to survive, never mind leading people from here to there. Okay, so that's thought number one. Thought number two, is that going to cut it? That circle. We would have made it smaller, but then we couldn't fit the words loving union in it. Okay? If I've got a little baby loving union going on, a little 5 minute in the morning. Now, loving union, I'm not talking about having a quiet time. A quiet time is certainly part of it, but we're talking about much more. We're talking about in this space every day where I become quiet enough to receive God's will and presence into my life. This is not, did I do my quiet time, did I say my prayers? Did I sense His presence and did I get His direction? Okay? A little baby thing like that, if you're setting yourself up for failure. I've often had to sit with people in conversations, and I mean it in no condemnational way, but where I say to them, I'm burning out this, that, and we're talking about that kind of matter, and then it's like that. And then I said, dude, if I did what you did, I would feel what you feel. There's nothing special about me. I would definitely, if I had the walk with God that you're currently having, I would actually look worse than you. You're actually looking good. Okay, considering all matters, as my wife can attest to, I completely fall apart if that doesn't happen in any given day. Okay, I go off the rails. That is lifeblood for me, right over there. Okay, so number one, no loving union. Good luck. Two, small loving union, equal luck. Three, the thing about loving union is that it doesn't just last the whole day. Well, certainly doesn't for me. Maybe you guys are better at it than me. So what happens here is I am having a loving union and I'm seeing His will. I'm filled with His peace. Everything's awesome. Things going well. There I go. And at 10 o'clock, my boss steps into the office. And man, he shakes that loving union. Okay. Suddenly, loving union is out of the door. What do I need to do then? I need to go back to loving union. And by this, I'm not saying take it another hour. I'm saying if you need to go into the toilet cubicle and go and connect with your loving union and bring it back to there where it's still with you. Now you're in loving union again. At 2 o'clock, you get the phone call about your car that you booked in for an annual service that was going to be 1-3. Now they're speaking in double digit numbers where they're saying, no, we noticed that your brake, your discs are basically gone and you can risk it, but we give you a 10% chance of living. Okay, and it's all this, now currently you're rattled because you barely have money to make it through the month as ease, and it's the fifth of the month, and now they brought you the car news. What do you need to do? You need to go back to your loving union, and you need to drag it back up with you again so that you are constantly living in loving union. what I have historically done is I've not done this. I have that and then hope to make it through the day so that I can go back there tomorrow. Okay? Because as I leave this little circle, I feel the loving union fade. Okay, and again, it's most likely just more unspiritual than most of us, but I feel it fade. I feel the kindness go. I feel things go. And I would say a quick prayer, but you know what? The prayer is more said and it's will be good and right, but I don't actually get to a point where I slow down in that moment, really become quiet again, really bring the loving union with me again. So the third thing is it's not going to take you through the whole day. The fourth thing, and this is also unfortunate, towards the end of last year, I realized that I'm going Sydney backwards on many backwards on many levels, and I can do very little physical activity. This, that. But I just realized I have to do something. I have to somehow. I need to get fit with my constraints. This, that. So I just started walking. Okay. Well, I walk every morning, but walk with more intensity. I walk every morning for my prayer walk. But said, okay, so I then decided that I need to this discovery thing, 10,000 steps a day. So let's do it one shot. That's 8 kilometers, which is actually a long walk, even if you walk fast. But anyway, so then I realized that that's a very hard way to get points. If you can attach a heart rate monitor to this baby, Discovery gives you points quicker. So I got this watch that gives you your activity, and it's got these three sort of circles that needs to be completed. The first one they call move. What that is there's a calorie goal of calories that you need to burn in a day, and obviously it measures your heart rate, supposedly how you burn the calories, and then you're now starting to burn calories. The idea is that at some point during the day or before the end of the day, that needs to be completed. Then there's the exercise goal, where the goal is that you would do 30 minutes of exercise where your heart rate goes above a certain level, and it moves. The stand one is that you're supposed to stand for at least 1 minute within an hour. So if you're confined a lot to meetings, whatever, and it's quite cute. The watch even tells you, hey, dude, time to stand up. Okay, and then you stand up, you walk around a bit, and then the watch says, okay, you can sit down again. And so at any given day, and it's been interesting to watch this, at any given day, different times, those three circles get completed. Now, sometimes, and I have many friends who have the same deal, sometimes I have once with Temba Kulu, we were at an eight-hour workshop that day, then went out for dinner together. I dropped him at his place at 11. He still got onto a treadmill at 11 to close the loop. Okay, these guys are quite clever, because how it works, if you don't close the loops with Discovery, they give you the watch. If you don't close the loops, you start paying for the watch. So every goal that you don't make in a week, you pay for a part of the watch. So that's pretty motivational. Okay, the first time I got the watch, it was a terrible thing that I saw the next morning when I woke up. It resets. What an ugly picture. We were at the baptism last night. I've not been able to do my exercise walks, got home at whenever. So I did my walk at, I don't know, 9 last night or something like that. So now I'm going up Lincoln. The park is closed where I usually walk now. Because I try and walk 80% of my heart rate, that my heart rate will go up to 80%. And you need to walk like crazy to actually to achieve that. So I did my 40 minutes. My average heartbeat was just above 80% for 40 minutes or what have you. And it's like, yeah, I made my steps and da-da-da-da. And I wake up this morning and it looks like this. Okay. Loving union works the same way. You can't live off yesterday's loving union today. There might be little scraps and pieces left of it, but guess what? Every morning you almost start at zero again, and every morning you can't say I had loving union yesterday, I'm going to just get it through today. Let me tell you, there is no way that you will move God's people, or yourself for that matter, from here to there without that connection, without a loving union. As to where you find your peace, your love, your kindness, and everything of God, and where you get a sense of where He is calling you to go. That's connection. Moving on. C number 3, character. Over the last year, it has become increasingly clear to me how important this C is And that I think it is one of our biggest challenges as a group here and for us as a church. Character, what I'm calling here is the ball and chain, dealing with your ball and chain. Let's just go back to, in order to understand this better, to get back to a working definition of what character is. And after thinking, praying, trying to figure it out, I've read so many definitions on character, and it never really made sense to me. And eventually I thought, let me try and figure out my own definition of character, and here's where I landed. And I've added a word, which we're not going to like that word. Character is the ability to consistently make God-glorifying choices with a God-glorifying attitude, irrespective of circumstance, and here's the new word, temperament, feeling, or cost. Character is the ability, to consistently make God-glorifying choices with a God-glorifying attitude. Here's something that I've learned about myself. For all my years as a Christian, I have most likely, and I hope you take this note, pursued, let's put that, use that word, and tried to make God-glorifying choices. And have most probably, and again, please take this in the spirit of what is said, done it more than what I did not. The choice part. What I've realized is the attitude part has been severely lacking. Okay? So I would see the right choice. This is the right choice. And I'm like, got to do it. Let me do it. And I do it. That was not a very God-glorifying attitude, friend. You guys want me to serve and... Hey, do you want to help out with the teens? Well, what would be the God-glorifying thing to do? This. There I am. I'm here. I put in my hours, do what needs to be done. I'll even be here first. I can leave last. But the attitude is, in my heart of hearts, I don't want to be here. Okay? Character is the ability to consistently make God-glorifying choices with a God-glorifying attitude, irrespective of circumstance. It's easy to make that choice while you're there in loving union. It's a lot harder to make it with a difficult boss. Irrespective of circumstance, irrespective of temperament. Oh, it's so much easier for you to make that kind of decision. It's so much easier for you to be kind than what it is for me to be kind. So much easier for you to be disciplined than for me to be disciplined. No, the question is, what is the God-glorifying choice and the God-glorifying attitude? So irrespective of circumstance, irrespective of temperament, irrespective of feeling. Well, I don't feel like doing it right now. And irrespective of what it will cost. You know, it's often making a God-glorifying choice costs something. So that's the definition of character. Guess what is going to be required if we want to move people from here to there? It's character. Isn't that one of my favorite passages? What Caleb had when, you remember when Moses sent out the spies and they all came back and 10 of them said we can't, and Caleb and Joshua said we can, and eventually God said, you know what, I'm going to just let these people cruise around in the desert for 40 years, die. Joshua, Caleb, you guys, and all the children will eventually enter the promised land. And remember, entering that promised land doesn't mean fall into the promised land. You'll still have to fight your way in. 45 years pass, and then Caleb says, now then, just as the Lord promised, he has kept me alive for 45 years since the time he said this to Moses while Israel moved about in the desert. So here I am today, 85 years old. I am still as strong today as the day Moses sent me out. I am just as vigorous to go out to battle now as I was then. Now, give me this hill country that the Lord promised me that day. You yourself heard the Amalekites were there, the cities were large, they were fortified, but the Lord helping me, I will drive them out just as God said. How on earth do you keep that attitude for 45 years? That, friends, is what is called character. Have any of you ever heard of a guy called Alex Honnold? Okay, he is a 32-year-old American professional adventurer rock climber. Okay, and sort of the best currently, as far as what we could research, the best in the world at it. He is the only person in the world to have a free solo climb, meaning no ropes or nothing, El Capitan in California. It's a rock face. El Capitan is Spanish for the chief or the captain. It's a vertical rock formation that is 900 meters high from the bottom to the top. Okay? And he's the only person in the world ever to have free climbed that. No ropes. No equipment, no gear. It's you. Okay? Now, a number of other people have climbed it with equipment. And when they do the climb, it takes them, on average, between 7 to 14 days to complete it. He did that same climb in 3 hours and 56 minutes. Up. Okay? I think that takes some character. How do you think Alex, can all of you guys see this? How do you think he would do if we just added this one little thing? That didn't happen, we just added it. Okay? This is here to there. This is your personal character weakness. If you want to move from here to there, guess what? You're going to have to deal with this baby. Because there is just no way that you're going to move from here to there with such a heavy ball and chain around your foot. What I realized about character in the middle of the five C's, as it was on my board one day, and I looked at it, I realized it's literally the center of it. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 5 C's, it's in the middle. And everything is built around it. Even if I'm called and I'm close to God and I believe in Him, but I don't have the character to consistently make God-glorifying choices with the God-glorifying attitude, irrespective of circumstance, temperament, feeling, and cost, it's not going to happen. No matter how skilled I am, no matter how much chemistry I have, if it's a 45-year journey in the desert and I don't have character and I have this ball and chain, it's not going to happen. So what are some of these character challenges that we need to tackle as we move from here to there? For me, and there's an array of character challenges, I'm going to mention 4 of them that I think could be fairly representative for us as a congregation. Number 1 is comfortability. Okay? Comfortability is a character thing. I just like to be comfortable. The word comfortability is being in a state of physical or mental comfort, contented and undisturbed. I'm comfortable. It's my happy place. The only problem is I constantly want to live in my happy place. And me living always in my happy place is not going to help people move onto God's agenda. A couple of years ago in Joburg, one of the brothers came to visit me, a campus student, and we were sitting, talking outside of the table, grass, in the backyard, front yard, actually. And Chloe, which was very sweet because she is more quiet by nature, she actually ran up to him and said, "Hey, will you play touches with me?" It's a sporty brother at this stage. "Will you play touches with me?" He said, "No, unfortunately not." And she said, "Oh, okay." And she walked away. And I said, "Wow." I said, "Why didn't you want to play with her?" He said, "I am conserving energy." I was flabbergasted. I said to him, "Are you telling me that you are too lazy to play with a 9-year-old and connect with her?" And then he said, "Now that you say it that way, let me go out there. That's just it." Let's call it what it is. Comfortability is being lazy. Idle. Selfish. And I'm not saying we shouldn't have quiet times. Please understand the spirit of this. I'm not saying we shouldn't have a time of having a break and we need loving union and we need to recharge emotionally, whatever. It's just not, don't recharge all the time. Okay? Symptoms of this is you have lots of hope but little action. Oh, do you know this? I can do that. Awesome. Nothing happens. You're often thinking about planning, but you never do. Or you are forever planning, but never doing the plan. You are a constant procrastinator. You just, you know what? I just take things as they come. You wing discipling times. In other words, we're going to get together for discipling time. Andre and I, we're going to meet, and as Andre comes, no thinking, no praying, no loving union, no planning, you just wing it. You wing Bible talks. You come home from work and then quickly, I'm going to put together a Bible talk and then I'm just going to wing it. I've got so much experience, I'm just going to wing it. That is comfortability. That is a ball and chain, friends. We're not going to have these little IBGs, these image-bearing groups in our cities. Your group is not going to be an image-bearing group if comfortability is not attended to in your world. If I'm not willing to say, no, what is a God-glorifying choice now with a God-glorifying attitude? Let me do that. I think one of the second, or a second one is apathy. Apathy, and it's a cousin of comfortability. They could even be brothers. Apathy is a lack of interest, enthusiasm, or concern. You're dull. You're surviving. Surviving, man. But you're not thriving. You're getting by spiritually as a group. You do the bare minimum. When do we have a small group? When are we supposed to have it? Once a month, twice a month? How many times a month do you want us to have a Bible talk? Once? How many people am I supposed to disciple to? It's apathy. It's a getting by feeling. You're on the sidelines. You are very rarely in the game. Now, just to be clear, I'm not talking here about clinical depression. If you have clinical depression, that's a whole different story, and you need a seat to get the help that you need, and you need to drink what you need to drink to be able to take you to where you need to go. And no, that's not what I'm talking about. You guys get it? I'm talking about a character flaw. I'm talking about lacking in zeal. Romans 12:11, there it is. It is in the Bible. Never never be lacking in zeal, but keep your spiritual fervor serving the Lord. Again, I'm not saying we cannot have highs and lows. You guys get what I'm saying? But there is not a apathetic, distant, where there's a holy discontent that we want to bear the image of Christ into this world. I want to do it. I desire for my group to do it. I desire for my neighbors. I desire for the whole world to know. And I maybe don't have what it takes to get it to the whole world, but I have what it takes to just get it to my neighbor. Apathy. Apathy is a ball and chain. The thing with character challenges is this. Either you deal with it or it ultimately does deal with you. And by that I'm not saying that we can completely eliminate our character challenges, but I'm saying if you don't attend to it, all the time that you're not attending to it, it is attending to you. Number three, insecurity. Insecurity is uncertainty or anxiety about oneself or a lack of confidence. Now again, insecurity is a close friend of anxiety, fear, and doubt. I'm not going to unpack everything. Almost everything in life is understandable, but it doesn't mean it is acceptable. Okay, I want to be sensitive here and what I say. If I often say this to people when I study the Bible with them. Let's say, on issues of racism, let's say that I have been robbed by a person of another color, and my mom has been robbed of a person of another color, and my grandpa has been robbed by a person of another color. Can it be understandable that I can sometimes be nervous when I'm in a neighborhood where I don't know what's going on? Can it be understandable? Would it be acceptable for me to not be loving towards people? No. Can it be understandable that there's some fear? Can it be understandable, again, let's turn the card the other way around, is it understandable for someone that's black or colored to feel like white people are bad people? Okay, because of history. Is it understandable? Totally it's understandable. Totally it's understandable. Would it be acceptable? No. So the same with any character thing. Is it understandable that I may be feeling insecure? Because of a whole array of things that has happened in my life, that is happening now because of personal issues that I have or whatever. Is it understandable that I'm insecure? Yes. Is it acceptable? No. I'm a child of God. That's my identity. I'm not going to be able to help people move from here to there if I can't. Understandable that I have those feelings, but I need to then take captive those thoughts, and I need to make them obedient to Christ and say, you know what, I'm not the star of the show, but I am a child or a daughter of God, and I believe that He has called me to do this. We've been in loving union, and I feel like He's made clear where we need to go, and I've sought counsel and whatever, so let's go. But the fear and the anxiety and the insecurity, it's going to hurt you. It's a ball and chain. The fourth one here, and I think this is a big one, okay, is a victim mentality. I cannot help it. My circumstances are so hard. The world is against me. I'm powerless to change. If that's you love to share your tragic story. In other words, well, let me just tell you about the people in my group again. I've got sons. Oh, no. Yeah. And I've got sons. Oh, no. Yep. I wonder where they were. Yep, they're with me. Okay, it's all the thing is, you know what I'm talking about? It's the tragic story of why I can't, and why this is not possible, why this is so hard, why my life is so hard, why this group is so hard, why the odds are against me. It's a victim mentality. You are never going to move yourself, let alone other people, from here to there if you live by a victim mentality where you feel sorry for yourself. Again, why is that so incredibly sinful? Where is the focus? It's me. It was Moses. Oh, no, I don't think so. I don't know your name. They won't believe me. This, that, this, that, this, that. Where should the focus be? The focus should be on God. So how do we deal with these character challenges? Number one, don't be a victim. I'm not saying don't be tempted to be a victim. I'm saying don't give into the temptation to be a victim. Number two, you have to say, here is not an option. This is where we are as a group. This is where I am as a person. I have been here now forever. And forever is enough. Here is not an option. While here is an option, and let's be honest, we love here. We love it. We want to hug it. It's our best friend because it's where we are comfortable. Okay, so number two, here is not an option. Number three, you have to take ownership of your situation. You cannot wait for the rider on the white horse to come over the horizon It is yours. Your character issue is your character issue. My character issue is my character issue. If you are willing to help me, oh, just that's gravy. But whose character is it? It's my character. Whose call is it? It's my call. Okay? Now, I think we know the rest of the drill. Get a mentor. Okay? If you could get where you need to be by yourself, you would be there already. Okay? So you need someone to come alongside you. Get a mentor. You guys remember the rest of the list? Okay? Read everything you can. Pray. Do. Reflect. Get 2% better. I'm not going to unpack the whole thing. I think we know the drill. We've done it on a sermon. What I do want to just skip back to is ownership for a moment. We'll talk about it in another class at another time in a lot more detail. What I want to ask is, who is driving your growth? Your spiritual growth. Who is driving it? Are you driving it? I'm not asking who should be driving it. I'm asking who is driving it. Who's driving the forward movement of your group? Are you driving it? Let me tell you how this can be seen, and how I've seen it, and I feel... Has it ever happened to you where you realize something about yourself and you think, oh my goodness, I cannot believe that I've been so stupid for so many years. Has that ever happened to you? Yeah. Where you sort of just miss something. Oh my goodness, has this happened to me? I suddenly came to the realization, to the detriment of many around me, that I realized that what I do is I baby people. So what I do in a discipling time is, let's say I'm meeting with, I'll just randomly pick a guy, let's say I'm meeting with Rob, then what I do is I'm driving the agenda. Hey Rob, so how's it going with you and Sandy? Oh, it's going like this, I'm going like, oh, okay, good. And Rob, and I know last time you said that this, you guys were going to go on more dates. Is that happening? Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, no, Rob, how's Matt? I know Matt's like this. Hey, Rob, tell me about your group. How's Roger and Lynn? I know you were going to have this conversation with them. Did you have the conversation? Oh, I had the conversation with them. Who's driving it? Yeah. It's me. I'm the one with the list. I shouldn't have the list. It's not my group. His group. Who should have the list? He should have the list. And I realized, oh my goodness, I'm the one with the list. And every meeting that I'm having, and with the office staff, everywhere, I'm the one with the list. I'm the one saying, man, we're going to be there. We're going to be there. This is how we're going to get there. Are we still on track? Instead of saying, hey, for you and what you're responsible for, you're supposed, what does there look like for you? Are you planning on getting there? I don't know. What did you think of? I still don't know. Well, maybe you should go and think about it. And then come back. So what should be happening, this is how you see ownership. What ownership looks like is I get with Rob. Rob is, one, grateful to actually be with me. So other than us maybe being friends, sorry, I'm just picking him. There's nothing going on here. Okay? Other than us just being friends, he's grateful that I'm willing to mentor him. And so he's coming, and he's coming with his list, and he's saying, hey, Banner, listen, I just want to bring you up to speed as to, I know last time we spoke about Sandy and myself, and this, we had that conversation, and this is how it went, and these were some of the things that I said. I'm a little bit concerned about this, but this, look, what do you think? With my group, obviously, what we decided in the first 3 months, we really want to work on the love element and loving one another, and this is sort of the plans that we came up with. What do you think? Then, man, we've not been seeking and saving the lost, and I thought more about it and prayed more about it and realized that these are some challenges, and these are, Sandy and I spoke, and these were some thoughts that we came up with as to what we think would engage our group and would help us. Okay, what do you think? Who's taking the ownership? Then it would be Rob. I think we have an enormous amount of a lack of ownership as leaders. I think it's in our groups. I think it's spoon feeding. I think it's babying. And I'm not saying we shouldn't be there for one another. Again, please understand where I'm coming from. I'm saying that the wrong person is driving the agenda. And I have a greater desire for you to be there than what you have. And I need to first help you to actually just get the desire to be to be there, and then you need to take ownership of it. And then I come alongside you. And man, I'm there for you. I'm in your corner. I'm your greatest cheerleader. I'll be your mentor. I'll help you. But you need to be driving the agenda. You need to be knowing what's going on. It's called ownership. If we don't own it, it's a ball and a chain. We need to deal with that ball and chain. How do you know if you, as a leader, are owning it or not, your group? These kind of words. My people just won't. My people just don't. My people just can't. Okay? What do I mean by that? Hey, is everyone in your group studying the Bible with someone?
My people just don't do that. What do you mean your people just don't do that? Sorry, I mean my people can't do that. Okay, I just don't know. My people just don't do that.
Okay, how's your group doing with being punctual? Oh man, you know what? My people, they all have young kids. They just can't. They can't. Is that ownership? Okay. Here's what ownership looks like. Hey, how's it going with your people? Why are your people not punctual? I've not led them to be. Hey, I notice your group doesn't really, it's my imagination, or aren't they really studying the Bible with people and helping them become Christians? Why isn't that happening? I've not inspired them towards that end. I've not helped them to have a love for the lost. I've not helped them come up, and for us as a group, come up with a creative plan in order to do so. That's why it's there. I'm owning it. It's not there. I've been called to take it there. It's not there because I've not done it. And yes, why did the people not repent in Jeremiah's case? Because the dude, they just were hard-hearted. Did the dude make every effort? Go and read the book of Jeremiah. This man labored and toiled towards that end. He was very creative with illustrations and everything. You know, smash this. This is what's going to happen to you guys if he was working it. So I know, yes, there's that element. But my guess is, 90% of the time, our people are not where they need to be because you and I have not led them to be there. We need to own it. Amen. That's character.